Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings from the Darkness is an eclectic collection of writings by a talented and diverse group of writers and published authors in dedication of and in support of our dearest friend, the award-winning and best-selling author Yvonne Mason and her son. All sales of this anthology, present and future, are donated to her in support of her son, who at the time of this publication has been ill and out of work and struggling to support his family due to an undiagnosed illness. Yvonne has been an inspiration, selflessly supportive, and a dear friend to many aspiring writers and indie authors. She believes in paying it forward, offering her knowledge and insights and friendship to kindred souls. Yvonne has a saying, she threatens to let loose the flying monkeys when there is wrongness in the lives of those near and dear to her. So after bringing us together for a successful and fun-filled double anthology by Yvonne, including notable authors and first-time published writers, and after learning about the continued troubles of her son and his family, we came together as such monkeys to fly free, far, and wide in what we do best, G.L. Lentz. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and www.blackbedsheetbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yep, this is Off the Chain on a Saturday evening at 8 o'clock Eastern. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that was a piece of shameless promotion. Blessings from the Darkness, I take no royalty from that book. Neither does any of the authors, and neither does the publisher. Everything that it comes off that book does go to my son, who is still very ill and who still is out of work with astronomical medical bills. So if you're so inclined and you like books and short stories of strange and odd and scary, go and order Blessings from the Darkness. It will help him out tremendously. And my friend Victor Aurelius is the one that did that ad. He is also another one of my ad people, and he is fantastic. So contact Victor. Contact my friend Christopher Dunham if you need ads, because both of those men are just over the top with voiceovers and ads. Tonight, my guest is the last of the four that I had to cancel when we got visited by Hurricane Matthew back in the late summer. And it's a small world that we live in. He and I were just talking before the show, and I'll get into it with him again, but our paths crossed many years ago, and we didn't even realize it. Author Alan Gravett, who is from Atlanta, Georgia, he attended Russell High School, where I graduated from in 69. He graduated in 63. And then he went to Georgia Tech in the physics department. He was president of Gamma Beta Phi, and he was the commander of Pershing Rifles. Yes, Alan is a Vietnam veteran, and thank you, Alan, for your service. We appreciate it so much. Alan dropped out in 1967 to work and was immediately called in for a physical and drafted. And he enlisted to gain some control of time and branch instead of being drafted. His basic training was at Fort Benning, his AIT at Fort Sill, his field artillery, attended the non-com officer candidate course at Fort Sill. He was an honor graduate, promoted to staff sergeant, E6, with 9.5 months' time in service. And then in 1968, he took that big bird to the rice paddies. Now, for those of you all that grew up in that time period, y'all all understand that our service personnel, when they returned, were not treated very kindly, and I am ashamed of that, because this was not a war they picked. This was a politician's war. It was never declared a war. It was always declared a police action. So we lost a lot of brave men and women to a police action that we should have never been in, the only war we ever lost. And tonight I honor my friend Alan Gravett, because he sacrificed a lot, as well as did those who lost their lives and limbs and families because of that police action. He was assigned to the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment as chief of section on a M109 self-propelled 155mm howitzer. Regimental commander was Colonel George Patton, one of my favorite colonels. He was slightly injured a few times and then seriously injured. His legs were crushed and surgery was required to fix the right leg. So, yes, Allen sacrificed a lot for a politician's police action. 5 months later, he left the service and went to Georgia Tech, and in 2 quarters, he completed his BS in physics. His next quarter started graduate school at Georgia State University with a major in science education with a strong focus on physics. Ladies and gentlemen, I could go on and on with this man in introductions, but I'm going to let him tell you his story. Allen, welcome to the show, and thank you, my friend, for your service and your sacrifice.
Oh, thank you, Yvonne. It's great to be with you tonight.
This has been a long time coming, my friend.
Well, we got delayed by the hurricane, but here we are, and the weather is beautiful. I'm down on the Georgia coast right now, and I've been down here for 4 or 5 days, and the weather has been absolutely magnificent.
Well, you could have just come on another couple hours and come to my house, and you wouldn't have had to pay for a hotel room.
Well, now, I've got a little place down here, a little bluff cottage at Shellman Bluff, so I can stay here pretty cheap, but someday I'm going to come down there and visit you in lovely Florida.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, Allen and I have a history. It's interesting how life turns. I grew up in East Point, so did Allen. We both went to the same high school. He probably also went to the same elementary school, which was Park Lane, because he lived in my neighborhood. Palm Drive was a 3-block street. The first block was up a hill. The second block was on flatland. That's where I lived. The third block was down in the holler. That's where Allen lived. Allen lived there in 1956. I was 5 years old. I lived in the middle block. He went to school with the people that I lived across the street from, didn't you, my friend?
I'm sure we did. I would say that East Point was sort of a Mayberry. It was a wonderful place to grow up. We didn't live there very long, but we lived in that neighborhood for a long time, moved away for 3 years, and then we're back and spent the rest of my years growing up there in East Point.
And what's so funny, ladies and gentlemen, Allen graduated in 1963. I started high school in 1964 with his sister, Joy. So while Allen and I didn't run in the same circles, his sister and I did. And it's funny how that wheel turns, and thank goodness for technology, because we have reconnected, and now this wonderful human being with all of these things behind his name, which I'm going to get him to explain to you, is now a published author, and I am so proud of you for that. But before we get into that, let's talk about your history. Oh, my heavens. I'm reading 1972, you started teaching at Lakeshore High School, a rival of ours.
That's right. I was at Lakeshore for 7 years, and several teachers who had come from Russell were teaching there, so when I walked in, there were a couple of teachers there that I had been around them as a student in the years before, and it was a different relationship. Mr. Collins, who was the art teacher, and Alec Truitt, who was our football coach at Russell and taught mathematics. Suddenly I was working with them as colleagues, and it was a little strange.
I bet, because you were so used to calling them Mr. Collins and Mr. Crook, and I remember them well. And then all of a sudden you're on equal footing in a teaching environment. I bet it was strange at first.
It was strange, but they were so gracious that it just made those years at Lakeshore marvelous, and I'm still in touch with a lot of those students that came through Lakeshore during that era. And I meet with some of them from time to time, and it's just marvelous to keep up with them.
Well, during that time, and like teaching wasn't insane enough, you participated in the installation and use of one of the first two personal computers in Fulton County. And then, ladies and gentlemen, this man's amazing. Not only did he do that, you were a star teacher in 1975, a tennis coach, a state champion team. One of your students won the state science fair in robotics, which evolved in your life. And then you were also a race car driver. What, did you have an extra 12 hours in your day that I didn't know about?
No, not really. It's you just do what you do, and you're lucky to run into people who enrich your life beyond what it would have otherwise been. You know, I can't claim credit for very much of that, but I was fortunate enough to be there with those great students and the great athletes, the tennis players who were part of my team. One of those great players, Joe Sweat, was just absolutely marvelous. And he was not a tall guy, but he was quick. The young man who won the robotics competition, isn't it strange? He inspired me, and a few years after that, I was running a business that focused on industrial robotics and industrial automation equipment.
Wow.
And it was, I would say that he got me thinking about what could be done. And his creativity, and I hope I've contributed some to what he was learning. We were all learning because robotics was totally brand new at the time.
Uh-huh.
And this was just the beginnings. And then within just a few years, I was actually building robotics to go into places like the Savannah River plant and the Ford plants and other types of automation equipment that, let's say this, didn't make me a lot of money, but it kept me off the street at night.
And it was a satisfaction of being creative. I don't know if you heard the show the other night, but I had an author on my show. And one of the things that was on his webpage is that our world is made up of dreamers, the artists, the musicians, the authors, the inventors. And without the dreamers, our world as we know it, we would not have it.
Oh, is that true? My wife had a hard time describing to people what I was doing in this business. And finally she came up with a succinct way to describe it to people. She said, he invents with a schedule and a budget. So that pretty well captured. And I suppose when I was in elementary school, I had in my mind that I wanted to be an inventor, to make things. And for many years, I did that and had a great time doing it.
And think about where we've come with robotics. They use robotics in operating rooms now.
It is becoming absolutely beyond what we would have ever imagined 20 years ago. The ability to not only do industrial type things, but also the work in generating a robot that looks and talks and moves like a human being.
That's right.
The speed at which that's come about is rather amazing. And just in the last week or so, I read that some folks over in Europe were actually talking about making robots with the same sort of rights as a person would have. Now, I think that's a little silly myself, but the fact that we're talking about it.
Exactly. I remember hearing something about that, and I'm going, wait a minute. They're robots. They're not human. But then you have these movies of robots that picked up human emotions and feelings. So anything is within the realm of possibility.
Well, I think we've seen movies like The Bicentennial Man and iRobot, which are both very interesting, but ultimately the idea of creating a cybernetic brain that has the same level of creativity and even consciousness is just remarkable. I read an article a couple of days ago that they seem to have identified the location in the brain where consciousness arises. And they've done this by studying people who were injured, had brain injuries and were conscious, and brain injuries, but they were not conscious. And then comparing the location of the damage, and they've sort of isolated a particular part of the brain that seems to control that consciousness. And
wow.
When you identify something, then you start thinking about, well, how do I understand its working? And then how do I duplicate it? It's a scary time. Don't know which way we will be going over the next 100 years, but it ought to be fun.
And I would love to be around to see it, because technology changes hourly. It used to change weekly. Now it changes sometimes minute by minute.
Well, that's true, and the interplay between the work people are doing and the ability to communicate it over the internet, where I can go in and read something that has just been published, incorporate that into what I'm thinking about, and it just gets to feeding on itself, and I think we're going to see that. Yeah, I'd love to be around another 50 or 60 years, but I suppose I'm a little bit beyond that right now.
Oh, maybe not. Anything's possible, and all is highly probable.
Well, that's true. If they'll just come up with something that will keep the body from breaking down, I'll be happy to try it out for them.
You and me both. Now, in the stuff that you sent me, I'm sitting here reading that during this time, now, ladies and gentlemen, this man is an absolute wizard, I'm telling you. You raced Porsches. And you said, remind me to tell you about sliding down the front straightaway at Road Atlanta, going the wrong way at 90 miles an hour sideways. Now, the visual that I have of that and your face, you got to fill in the blanks, my friend.
Okay. At one point, I somehow convinced my wife that buying a 912 Porsche was a good idea. And so we bought this lovely little red 1969 Porsche, and I raced it with the Porsche Club, and my wife also would drive in competitions. And we were driving out at Road Atlanta, and the event was called a solo event, and it had one car on the track at a time, and you would run a course, and they would set up the course with pylons to sort of guide you around, because they wanted to keep the speed under 100 miles an hour. So my car was a little heavier because it was one of the Targas, and it about 800 pounds heavier than some of the other cars. So even though I competed and did pretty well for a heavy car, very seldom did I come out first. This day, I was second. I was so close. So I thought about it, and I said, okay, what can I do to shave a little time? So as you come down the front straightaway, they had a little zigzag that was designed to slow you down. So I decided I was going to blast into that chicane, it was called, a little zigzag, at 90 miles an hour. And I was going to drift a little bit to go through the dog leg and then kick it back and straighten up. So I came blasting through there just a little over 90 miles an hour. I kicked it over, and she drifted over to the side just perfectly. I was in absolute control right up until the point that I tried to kick it back the other way to straighten up. When I did, instead of straightening up, I came all the way around sideways. Now, first of all, I'm hitting pylons, the little cones that they set to keep you on track. So I'm hitting those, blip, 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 blip. Now, each one of those added 1 second to your time. And I'm sliding sideways toward the dirt. Now, if you hit the dirt sliding sideways, you're going to roll over. The tires will dig in and you'll flip. So I downshifted, floored it, and she straightened up. And I went on down and finished through the end of the run. Unfortunately, I had knocked down 17 pylons.
Oh, my.
That added 17 seconds to my time, and I wound up dead last. Now, as I was sliding sideways, there were a whole bunch of my friends along the edge of the track there, and the only thing I remember was seeing their eyes were as big as saucers because they knew that I was in trouble. And it was only because of the beautiful handling of that Porsche that I was able to pull it back and straighten up and fly right, you might say. But it was one of those fine moments that makes for a great story. And I lived through it, which is even better.
Absolutely, because if you hadn't had this presence about you to stay out of the dirt, there's no telling what would have happened to you, and we wouldn't be having this wonderful conversation.
It might have been difficult. It certainly would not have been good.
No, because we've already lost too many of our alumni.
Well, that's true. This was some years ago, and it was some great fun.
Well, I was reading something else that was interesting, and my mind is saying, now, why didn't you finish this, or why didn't you do this? And it's when you and Linda got married and you bought the triplex and in the Virginia Highlands and in Midtown of Atlanta. Now, folks, if any of y'all know about Midtown, at one time it was a very exclusive part of Atlanta. I mean, it was a very, very nice place to live. And one of the tenants that Alan had was somebody that I admire. Number one, because this particular person decided to march to their own drummer before it was cool to march to their own drummer. And this particular person is one of the inspirations that caused me or encouraged me just by being the person that this person is, to write The Pink Canary. Now, this tenant in Allen's complex was none other than RuPaul. And at that time, she was just getting started. And you say, and the inspiration for my first unwritten book, Back Rent. Did you ever finish that book?
No, I haven't. I've had so many other ideas since then. I continue to work on the outline from time to time, but my goodness, there were such a whole range of characters that you simply wouldn't believe.
Yeah,
some positive, some negative, but some of the things I encountered during that period were most people just simply would not believe that people would do those things or would react that way or were really that totally insane. I think the thing about RuPaul that was most interesting was that he was a professional.
Uh-huh.
He was a performer. When he came and went from his home, he was dressed very professionally, very
classy,
in an ordinary way. We had several people that were performers that lived in several of our buildings, and you know the professionals would go to work, they would do their profession. Then they would come home, and they were, I hate to say ordinary, but if you saw them coming, if you saw RuPaul coming and going from his apartment, you would have thought that he was some sort of a young executive, maybe not in a suit and tie, but in quasi-business dress.
Uh-huh.
And I think the only thing that distinguished him was that he had Christmas lights on his balcony year-round.
Interesting. That is very interesting. And you got between RuPaul and Madame Chablis down in Savannah, those two iconic drag queens are the ones that I look to when I want to write about drag queens. Because they came out at a time where, you know, we've always had drag queens. Milton Berle was one of the funniest drag queens out there. But these two were very classy human beings, and in their persona of a drag queen, they carried themselves very, very professionally and believably.
Well, it's an art form of which I have absolutely no skill.
Alan, honey, you couldn't pull it off. Trust me, it would be difficult.
No. It would be. It's right for some people. I guess it's just not right for me. I have to, you know, they say a man's got to accept his limitations.
Well, we like you just the way you are, my friend. Now,
well, I hope so, because you're not going to get anything different.
It wasn't enough that you decided to race Porsches, right? So then you're going to retire at 35 and sail around the world?
Well, we started about 7 years before we actually left, and I had this notebook that was labeled the master plan, and the plan was to move on to a sailboat and go sail the world. So about 2 weeks after my target date, we actually moved on to the sailboat. We threw a big party in Atlanta for our friends. It was called the Great Sailing Off into the Sunrise Farewell Party. Because, as I said, on the East Coast, it's hard to sail off into the sunset. But my wife and I and my two-year-old son and a Cocker Spaniel moved on to a 35-foot sailboat and spent a little time outfitting and then headed north. And we sailed as far north as the Chesapeake in Washington, D.C., had just some marvelous adventures, met some of the most interesting people you could imagine, saw places from a perspective that most people don't. But it was great fun. It was great fun right up to the divorce.
And then you figured out that apparently being divorced from Miss Linda was not the thing to do. Am I correct?
Oh, it was the dumbest thing I've ever considered in my life. And we set up with a judge something that was unheard of at the time. We set up a joint custody. And so with our son, who was then about 2.5, almost 3, it kept us in contact with each other. And then at one point, I guess I had an epiphany. Either that or my mind started working properly again. I'm not sure really which it was. But I said to Linda, it just doesn't make any sense for us to be apart. And she said, well, I suppose that might make me the thinking man's choice. And so we started thinking about how we were going to put back together what had been broken. And I would refer to her as my soon-to-be former ex-wife. And she referred to me as her once-and-future husband.
I love it.
And we remarried. And I have to say, I think her husband this time is a whole lot better than the one she had before.
Their little maturity jumped right in there.
Well, she really didn't believe that I was going to pull off this dream of moving onto a sailboat. And even though on our second date, she took me up in a light airplane, took me flying, the sailboat, and especially with the two-year-old, she was not as comfortable with that. And I didn't hear her concern. So,
and that makes sense.
We have since gone sailing. We have since bought a sailboat, and no threat of breaking up at this point. Of course, our son is now 37, so he's a lot more capable.
And then, now, ladies and gentlemen, this is all leading up to him becoming an author, but you have to take the journey with us to understand how he got to where he is. So then you decided at 60 that you were going to start living a bucket list. Is that true?
Yes and no. I suppose I just started thinking about things that I wanted to do. And I don't think I'm not really sure that I ever referred to as a bucket list. But suddenly I decided that this book that I had floating around in my head for years, that I was going to start it. And I did. And I basically had the story all together. I wrote it. I rewrote it. I edited it. I rewrote it. I kept going back and forth, trying to get something that I thought I could be happy with letting go of. And, of course, that's where you came in. I don't think I would have ever finished that book had it not been for your encouragement. I couldn't let go of it. I kept going back unhappy with this or unhappy with that. And even after we got it in print, I found things that I was unhappy with. I had rewritten it so many times that it was becoming a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get it done. And I recall when you put out a post where you said you were putting together a Halloween anthology.
Yep.
And you'll have to tell me if you remember it the way I do. I wrote you an email.
Yes, you did.
And I said, I have this idea for a Halloween story. And would you consider it? And my memory is that you came back and were sort of not quite, well, absolutely. You just said, well, I'd be glad to read it and see if it fits or something. But I was inspired. And so we were down at the coast, and I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finish it. I'm going to let go of it. And Yvonne will tell me if it's not good enough. So I sat down and in 3 days wrote it, had Linda, who's an English teacher, by the way. You know, science people don't always get the punctuation and all that correct. But she went through it, said, hey, not bad, not bad. She made some changes. I corrected, sent it off to you. And you took it. And I wanted to get some more feedback from you. And your line to me, as I recall, was, Alan, take yes for an answer. You let go of it. Let's go.
Yep.
And I was able at that point to take one last look at the book and then let go of it. And that was tough.
Oh, honey, I understand, because it's like letting your child go. But it's like you said, if you keep messing with it and messing with it, it becomes a blur. And things that you had, it's like trying to, you remember when we were in school and we kept reworking problems until it became where we couldn't solve them if we wanted to, because we screwed up the equation so bad that we couldn't even straighten it out.
Yes.
It's the same premise.
Well, it's interesting. I began to think about it in part like an engineering project.
Mm-hmm.
And I one time had somebody tell me, this was another person from Russell High School who came and looked at a business I was running, and he said, your problem is you're more interested in building marvelous machines than you are making money. And if you don't make money, you're not going to be able to build the machines.
Because you're not going to have the money to build them with.
That's right. And, you know, the things that I've gone through as I've discovered how I can write, it's been humbling. It really has, because my first thought was, well, I want to tell a story that'll engage people and make them think. And then from that point, I realized that if I had mistakes in grammar or spelling or punctuation, that people are going to sometimes read and they'll see the mistakes rather than listening to the story.
And
my wife...
The thing that I learned, and I was like you, but the thing that I learned, and this is from years of reading, even out of the Big Six, these quote-unquote authors from the Big Six, I find mistakes in their books, but it doesn't take away from the story, because the story is what is it. And if somebody is going through with a red pen and finding mistake after mistake after mistake, that person's not after the story to begin with. They've cheated themselves. Shame on them.
Well, and that's true. That's true. If you're building a machine, if you're building a robot, you can talk about it all day. But when you throw the switch, one of two things happens. It either does what it's supposed to or it doesn't.
Exactly.
And there's no poetic license in a machine. It has to do the job, and it has to do it right, and it has to do it reliably. So I have been much more careful in trying to get the mechanism of the writing better, so that hopefully the people who get engaged in the story will not be distracted by something that they say, oh, he shouldn't have said it that way. I just finished a book by an FBI agent who is a friend of a friend of mine who just passed away. And it was a wonderful story. I enjoyed it immensely. Very informative about the way the FBI works. Three times he misused a word, and I thought, how are you going to take us guys who are so technically oriented or law enforcement oriented? We're oriented to everything except how all the words come together. I guess we just have to do the best we can and hope for the best.
And that's how we can.
I assure you, my second book will be much stronger than my first.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the name of his first book, Follow the Night, it takes place in Atlanta, and it will keep you up nights. It's all his fault I lost sleep those nights I was reading that book. I get my hands on him, I'm going to throttle him. It's engaging, it's suspenseful, it will keep you on the edge of your seat, and you find yourself saying, no, don't do that. Don't go there. Don't do that. And they do it. It's an amazing book.
I read somewhere that someone said, especially in your first book, write about what you know.
Uh-huh.
And some of those characters were friends of mine at Russell High School. And some of those people were friends of mine at Georgia Tech. And it was sort of fun putting that story together in a place and with people that I knew.
Uh-huh.
The second one has some setting down here on the Georgia coast, which is, again, something that I know and some areas that I know, and it's going to be fun, I do believe. But I had a problem with it. I'm having to rework it, Yvonne.
Well, that happened.
The recent election, it's set in 2020. And the recent election did not go the way many people projected.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I'm going to have to modify the beginning of the book that lays out the history of what had happened between 2016 and 2020. So, or else it'll just seem stupid. So, I'm working on that. I've got it out rather nicely, and I've got the way to work around it and still tell the story I wanted to tell.
So, what is the name of the second book?
2020 Vision, I think, is the working title. I may not wind up with that, but right now the title is 2020 Vision, reflecting on the year 2020 and a vision for what could be.
So when do you think you're going to release it?
I'm hoping that I'll be able to get it down to our friend and editor, Kelly.
Yeah.
Hopefully
that's
I'll get it
book.
To her. I'm sorry, what?
I was doing a plug for the publishing house. Ladies and gentlemen, he's talking about
dressing your book. Dressing your book. Kelly did a wonderful job. I'm hoping to have it finished in the next couple of months.
Well, you got to keep me informed because I got to bring you back on because we're almost out of time. We still didn't finish talking about all the stuff we needed to talk about. Plus, you got this new book coming out. So keep me up to date so I can book you and we can do the release, the launch party of this new book on the show.
Well, that would be much appreciated, Yvonne. Again, you come to my rescue.
Well, I have to tell you, Alan, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a female who does not cry. It's not in my wheelhouse. It's a weakness, and I just don't do it. But my friend, Alan Gravett, had me choking up and in tears because the one thing that I want to be remembered for when I am no longer here is I made a difference in at least one person's life. And Alan, I so appreciate what you said. It was very humbling and it was very poignant because I am only as successful as I help someone else to be. And by putting you in that anthology, if that jump started you, God, if we never sell another book, that anthology was a blessing.
You know, Yvonne, you're rather a teacher. I read once that teachers are immortal because they never know where their influence will end. And I know that you've worked with not just me, but you've worked with a lot of other people who would otherwise might not actually finish that first book and might not go to the second one or the third or might get stuck. And, you know, your influence, and I'm trying to do the same thing, in that I'm encouraging some of my students who are beginning to write some stuff that I read just on Facebook. And I encourage them not to wait until they're 60 or 65, but to start it and get it written now.
Absolutely.
Because there are some wonderful, wonderful kids out there. And I say kids, some of the people that I taught are now in their late 50s and some are in their early 20s. But I would love to see them put together to write what they're thinking about and finish it up. And it's so much easier now than it was 50 years ago to do that.
Even 15 years ago.
True. So hopefully, we can pass it on and get more beautiful words and ideas in print from a wider variety of people. Most of my students in recent times were African-American students, and some of them are just absolutely inspiring with the things they write. And we've got some good folks coming along.
Well, let's encourage them. Shoot, they could even join our little Phoenix Rising group that we have, because that is a place where people can go and put their thoughts out there and not be criticized but encouraged.
Well, that's true. That's true. And that's something that I haven't done, but I will do.
And when they're ready to publish, send them to us, because it is my goal for not another author, an indie author, to be taken by a less than credible publisher. It happens all the time, and that's a shame, because they get discouraged, they quit. That's why when people say, do you know a good publisher? Of course I'm going to say Dressing Your Book, because I'm co-owner of that. And I'm taking care of my authors because they mean something to me. They're not just a paycheck. They're not just somebody to suck the life out of. These people are offering something to the world that will be forever until the world ends. And those people are important to me, because I remember how hard it was when I struggled. I know you remember how hard it was, because we're all afraid to put our foot out there and test the waters because we're afraid of rejection. So what? We write because we can't do anything else.
Well, it's so encouraging when people contact you and say, I read your book, I just finished it, and I really enjoyed it. And you feel, honored, first of all, that they took the time to actually finish it. But even more so that they would call you and say, I enjoyed this, I just finished it. As a matter of fact, tonight at dinner, I had had someone who I've known for some years, but they came to me and handed me a copy of my book and asked me to sign it.
Wow.
It doesn't get a whole lot better than that.
No, it doesn't.
And they were asking questions about the characters and were talking about how this character reacted and did I really know somebody like that? And it was just awfully nice.
So now you've got to get the second one done so we can do the launch party. And you got to get all these students that you're mentoring to listen in on the show so they can make their dream come true. And before we run out of time, which we're going to do here in a couple of minutes, tell folks where you can be found. Ladies and gentlemen, the title of his first book is Fall of the Night, and you got to get that book. Not now. Wait till the show's over. But tell the folks where you can be found so they can interact with you.
Right. I'm on Facebook. Alan Gravett. The picture of me, there are actually a couple of Alan Gravitts, but the one is a picture of me with a small flock of lorikeets, which is an Australian small parrot, sitting on my head. Happy to if you would contact me, send me a friend request, and if I don't offend you too quickly, we'll have a conversation.
And ladies and gentlemen, Alan has told you how he made his dream real. And at the end of every show, I always talk about the fact that we are dreamers. And dreamers, if they're stubborn enough and tenacious enough and believe in the dream, we might not always believe in ourselves, but we believe in the dream. They make those dreams real. Alan made several of his dreams real. He raced a Porsche. He created robotics. He sailed his own sailboat. He returned from a war that should never have happened, and for that I'm forever grateful. He had his own company. He was a star teacher. He taught school. He's done so many things, and he's still not through. And the point of this is we are only limited by our own imagination. Is that right, Alan?
Oh, absolutely. And our will to make something happen, to make something out of nothing. I think it's important. I absolutely love to take an old piece of junk, whether it's a boat or a car, and turn it into something useful or beautiful. And if we make things, whether it's through writing or by going down in the shop and building something, life is better when you make things. You
yes.
make things from your own skill set and your own creativity.
And I agree. I wholeheartedly agree, because we're contributing not only to ourselves, but we're contributing to the future of others.
So true, Yvonne. How many books have you written, my dear?
17. Now I'm working on 4 more, plus the show.
See there, that's a pretty big dream, isn't it?
It is. It really is, because the show's a 5-year dream. The books are a lifelong dream. And I always say that the reason I'm successful is because of my brother Stan, who's retarded. And he never believed in failure. And he was not supposed to be anybody or even survive, but he never believed in failure. He taught me how to ride a bicycle, and I was older than him. So what we're saying, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to run out of time, is dreams are important. Fulfilling those dreams are important. And, yeah, you may take a different path. I took a lot of paths before I got here, but that's okay. Every path put me back where I needed to be and helped me along the way, as I'm sure Alan's did. And before, and Alan, when the show ends, I don't want you to hang up. I want to talk to you for a few minutes in archive.
Sure.
I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for spending an hour of your time with me and for us talking and sharing this wonderful stuff with 6,500 of our closest friends. And I'm bringing you back because I want to launch the book on my show, and I want to continue our conversation because you're full of dreams. I mean, you've done the Grand Canyon. There's, ladies and gentlemen, the man's got to come back. That's just, he's coming back. So tune in. But at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, when you are on your deathbed and someone says, do you have any regrets, don't be that person. Don't be that person that says, I shoulda, woulda, coulda. Because all you've got's right now. Whatever dream it is, I don't care what. If it's garbage collector, that's your dream. Make it real. We will be taking the weekend off. We will be back on Wednesday night, starting all over again. Watch for the guest of the shows. And as I always say at the end of the show, love yourself, like yourself, and be happy within yourself, because happiness does not come from without. No one can make you happy. Happiness comes from within. So until next Wednesday night, your host, Yvonne Mason, and we're off the chain. We're now off the air, so anything we'll say will show up whoever listens in archives, but that's okay. But what else, and that it's sort of a teaser for people that like to listen to the archives. They get all the good stuff. But what I wanted to tell you is once we get off of here and this show goes into archives, I will send you the link, and I want you to spread it around so people can listen to it. And then I'm going to upload it to all of my different podcasts, and it will show up on iTunes, on Stitcher, on YouTube, on FM.com, on TuneIn Radio, on MixCloud, SoundCloud, Podcast.com, and Spreaker. That's where we get the 6,500 total. We've got 2,300 plus just off of this show, and the other 3,700 is from the podcast.
Well, I think you've got the face of the earth covered, Yvonne.
Well, we're heard all over the world, even places I didn't even know existed, which is a beautiful thing. So
yes, that it is.
It is, because y'all are getting so much exposure over and over and over again. So when I upload them to the podcast, what I will do is I will put it up on the link on my page, and I will tag you in it. I want you to take those links, and I want you to make you a website and put those links up, because you're going to come back continually. My guests come back over and over. Just like the old Johnny Carson show. You know, you would stay up and you'd watch Johnny Carson because your favorite person was going to be a guest, but they waited until the last 15 minutes to bring him out. But they brought him back over and over. Dom DeLuise comes to mind. You know, he was a constant guest on Johnny's show. And Johnny had a following because of those guests that he rotated in and out all the time and kept bringing them back. Well, this is the premise of the show, is I bring my guests back more than once because I feel like y'all gain a following by being on this show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
So let's get this book done, my friend, and let's get it launched.
Well, something, even this inspires me to go back and go to work. I do have a problem, though. I've got too many projects. I've got a diesel engine sitting in the cabin of my sailboat that needs to be installed, and I've got an MG that I need to get the differential seal replaced on it so I can get it on the road. Life is just too short.
Well, you know,
and there are only
did.
24 hours in the day, and I need 26.
Well, what I do is I write until the muse goes quiet, till the voices shut up, and then I go and work on another project for a while.
Well, I'm ADD too.
But you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
I understand. Oh, there's a squirrel.
I was ADD before ADD was cool.
And all my kids are ADD and ADHD, and all my grandkids. But I've learned how to filter it. And I talk to myself quite a bit.
If you control it, you can utilize it.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
exactly.
when I was running the business, we might have 10 or 15 projects running at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to oversee all of those projects. And I would go from this engineer to the next one, to the next one. And I had to suddenly change gears. And instead of talking about this particular issue, I would have to go to another one. So, you know, if you embrace your ADD, it can actually be useful.
And that's why I say whenever is the best time for you to write, whether it's early in the morning, middle afternoon, or at night, write during that time, and then the other times take a break from it. Because what happens, you said that, you know, you worked on it, the first book, so much that it got so muddled. What happens is you get away from it. And when you get away from it, then the brain goes back to the story in your subconscious, and before you know it, everything is crystal clear. You know what you got to do. Of course, I keep notepads and things around me so I can make notes, but you jot down notes when you're working another project. Oh, yeah, I need to do this, and you write that note down, and then later on you take it back to your book, and boom, there it is.
You know, Yvonne, I got something for Christmas. that I think could be incredibly useful. When I was doing machine design, I had sort of a format that I set up to try to make sure that the project came together the way it should. And I used organizational tools to achieve that, whether it's Microsoft Project or something like that. And especially for the software stuff, it was necessary to, you know, get things organized. And for Christmas, I got Scrivener.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
I have it.
You have it?
I have it. I fight with it, but I have it. But it would work for you.
Well, I think it is. And there are a couple of things that came to mind that I could use it for, particularly, that it's really been cool.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is that you can put pictures in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a character in book two who is this frumpy older man, mayor of a small town, who becomes president. And I had this image of him in my mind, but it drifted. And what I have done is I went on the web and I started looking for pictures that were describable by the way this guy in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I found the picture. It was him. And so now I've got that picture to go back to. And the picture was of a guy who is a mayor in a small town. And I don't know why, but suddenly I have a real face and
yep.
a real suit of clothes and real shoes that go with the guy that I invented in my head. And now I've got a picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very, very useful.
And so you put it in your Scrivener and you can refer back to it.
Exactly, exactly. And pictures of locations.
Mm-hmm.
Where I, and you know, things that I've taken pictures of, I can drop it in there, and it's a source of tremendous detail. I have a friend who is a writer, by the way. He has started writing. He's got a set of books about the time period just after the Civil War.
Reconstruction.
His name is Sid Brown. And Sid has this ability to give you descriptions. He did Civil War reenacting.
Mm.
And Sid would say that he would take a picture from the Civil War period and would take a magnifying glass and literally crawl into the picture. He was looking at buttons, at shoes, the way the shoes were cut, the way the coat fit, the face. And when he writes, he gives you that sort of crawling into the picture detail. I'm most of the way through the first book. I bought three of his books, and am working my way through them.
Well, you got to get the second book done, my friend.
All right, I will get busy on it. We'll be home tomorrow, and I will have a week or so. I've got a little problem. I've got a spinal stenosis that's giving me fits. And I have to go. I'm sorry, what?
Kick its butt. Tell it you ain't got time to deal with it. It needs to go on down the road. You got things to do.
Well, that's exactly what I've told them, and we tried the steroid shots, and we tried the physical therapy, and it hadn't worked. But what happens if I stand or walk, especially if I'm walking around on concrete and Lowe's or standing around at a party? I can go out and rake leaves for 2 or 3 hours, and it doesn't bother me. I'm 15 minutes standing at a party, and I need to sit down. But it looks like we're going to surgery. I'm meeting with my doctor, the surgeon at Emory, on the 19th to see which way we go. But the doctor that I've been working with out there is said, you know, what we're doing is not working, so we can fix this. So I'm hoping that they can.
And while you're recouping, you can right away.
Absolutely. You know, as you get older, Yvonne, you start thinking of the things you're going to do when you can't do what you're doing today.
Mm-hmm. So there's things that I can't do anymore than I used to do, but I don't worry about it.
Yeah. I can do it all, but just not for as long a period of time.
Well, get this book finished, my friend, so you can get on the next one. You got a lot of catching up to do if you're going to catch up with me.
I have a lot. Well, I've got the outlines of about 8 more. So you're right. I got to get busy. And conversations like this, I'm good for another, 10,000 words.
Well, and when I catch you slacking, I'm going to say, Alan.
Yeah. All you got to do is kick my butt a little bit, and I'll move on.
All right, my sweetheart. Well, let me get off from here, get this thing shot up into archives, and that's your shot in the arm for the night. Let's give yourself a deadline for this book. I found that helps. I self-impose my own deadlines, and if I say I'm going to have a book done by such and such a date, that's my deadline. So give yourself a deadline. Put in there the fact you may have to have surgery. Give yourself an extra couple of weeks for that. But give yourself a deadline and then say, Yvonne, put me back on the show in this month on this day because we're doing the launch then.
Boy, that's no pressure.
No, not a bit. Mm-mm, no.
Not a bit. Okay.
Not a bit.
Fine.
Let's see.
Maybe I can do it by the 1st of April.
1st of April. I'm going to hold you to it because I'm going to put you on the show on the 2nd of April.
Okay. I'll get busy.
All right, my sweet. Thank you again.
You take care of yourself, and I look forward to seeing you some way down the road.
All right, darling, and get better.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.